Let me ask you a question. We're doing this series, and remember I mentioned we're doing it in conjunction with the kids department. It's called Questions, 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 and we're just hitting on a couple of the questions that Jesus asked. I'm wondering if any of you remember being afraid of the dark. Anybody in here? Anybody still afraid of the dark? Do you remember, though, when you were little, and you might hear a sound, and you're looking around your room, and you're just wondering what that is? And I don't know what you did. I mean, I know probably some of you, and those of you who are parents, you probably had your child come into the room and say, I heard something, I don't know what to do. And you know, you just kind of let them sleep with you for a minute, and when they fall asleep, take them back in their room. And I remember one time when we were afraid of the dark, my dad, I remember he wanted to finish it, and so he sat my sister and I down in each of our rooms, and then he went and turned off all the lights, and he said, look around the room, what are you afraid of? And we, you know, you're sitting there, and you're like, well, what's that? You know, and he goes, okay, keep pointing, and then he went and turned the light on, and then when the light came on, you realize what you were afraid of, it wasn't anything, it was maybe something hanging there, it was the way the light, the shadow worked, but fear is like that, right? We all have these fears. I mean, we have fears. I mean, think about some of the fears people are afraid of. You know, you're afraid of water or heights or animals or dogs or snakes or spiders or strangers. And a lot of times the fears aren't like super rational because we're afraid of things that may or may not happen, but they sound scary. I thought I'd throw this graphic up. You know, people with this latest plane crash, as we heard about Boeing, you know, those two planes that went down. And a lot of people are afraid to fly, and I understand that. Have you ever thought about flying? How does it even work? Of course, I think about it every time I'm on a plane, and I look at the massive size of that thing, and if we walk in there, and you just try to imagine how much that weighs, and then you're going, you're not really going that fast when it starts to gain altitude. I mean, it seems kind of fast, but it's not fast enough to fly. I mean, really, to have all that weight up in the air, and I know how it works. I mean, and when I say no, I mean, I know the words. I know it has something to do with thrust and lift and the shape of the wings, and I know all that, but still part of me thinks, this is not possible. It can't work, right? Because you've tried to fly, right, when you were a kid? Am I the only one? Seriously? None of you took cardboard and taped it to your arms and ran and ran and ran, and then you didn't feel anything? You're like, oh, that won't work. Did anybody jump off the roof? Anybody else? I tried it, none of them are living still. I did it with a sheet. I did it with a trash bag. No one else did this? Okay. Okay, thank you, Tim. You and me, baby. I think you've got more broken bones than me, but we're brothers in that. But the whole thing is, you know, plane travel is actually really safe when you compare it to all these other things. Plane travel, only 1 in 5 million actually die in a plane crash, as opposed to 1 in 500 walking on the street. Did you catch that? 5 million compared to 500. Or in a car, 1 in 77. And then you look at the other things you could die of. There's actually a lot more things to be afraid. I'm not trying to make you afraid. What I'm trying to do is show you how a lot of times fears are kind of irrational. I mean, but that doesn't matter because fear is an emotion. And there's other fears that really, really, really get us. Fears like, what if it doesn't work out? What if I'm wasting my time with all this? And what if everybody will know that I failed and then they won't like me anymore? And what if I'm not capable? And what if people find out about my past and who I really am? And what if I'm not good enough? And what if she's cheating on me? And what if he doesn't like me anymore? And what if I can't do it? And where will I end up? I mean, those fears, we fear things like what will happen or what might happen. And as many times as you try to put mind over matter, the fact is, fear is real. We lived in Minnesota for a while, and I remember the first winter we lived there, and I had a truck, and we lived on this big lake. It's called Marine Lake. It's a really big lake. And I saw all these guys' trucks out on the ice, and I thought, I got to try that. I got to drive out there. Anybody ever done that? Because I'd seen the lake before, and we've all been in a lake. I've water skied on lakes, swam in lakes. But I remember driving out on the lake the very first time, and I drove my truck, and I inched it right up to the edge, right where the sand ended and the ice began. It was a really clear line. And I remember sitting there for a long time. And I remember looking out on the ice, and there are trucks bigger than mine. And actually, on this lake, they had all these houses where they're ice fishing. And I remember sitting there, and I'm embarrassed to tell you in a way, because I'd like everybody to think I'm manly and, you know, super courageous. But I remember sitting there and shaking because fear. And I thought, this is so weird. I know it's possible. I'm looking out there and I see trucks bigger than mine and they're fine. And they drove right here. I can see where they drove. And it took me a few minutes. Maybe it was a long time. I don't even know. All I know is I was shaking and thinking, I have to do this. You're probably thinking, why? Why would you ever do that? I know. I just had to. I had to overcome that. I couldn't sit there and then drive off because I was on the edge of a rational, irrational fear knowing I can do this. I know how thick the ice is. They put it on, in Minnesota. They do that on the news all the time. Okay, now it's safe and you can get out and then they tell you when to get off and all that. And so I remember putting my truck in drive and I remember just taking my foot off the brake and it just kind of walked out on the ice. And I had my windows down. I was listening for cracks or something. I mean, seriously, there was nothing. And I remember just coasting right out there on the ice and thinking, this is no big deal. There's nothing. And 5 minutes before, inside, my entire body was saying, do not do this. It's not safe. It's not possible. Fear is real. Fear is tough. It's something that controls us. And as we talk about these questions, you got to wonder how much, and not only what are you afraid of, but how much of what you worry about actually happens? Do you ever think about that? How much time you invest in fear and worry, and then those things don't happen, and yet it doesn't keep you from worrying again. Instead, you just do it all over again. 500 years ago, this man, Michel de Montaigne, he said, my life has been filled with terrible misfortune, most of which has never happened. It's a human condition. We all struggle with it. I mean, fear is it's one of those things that just, it holds us up. Study after study has been done to illustrate this. I mean, it doesn't change really a lot of things, but a recent study said 85% of what the subjects reported they feared never happened. 85%. Of the 15% of things that did happen, of those 15% of things that did happen to them, almost 80% of those things they discovered they could actually handle and it wasn't as bad as they thought. And they actually reported that they feel like going through those things was good because it made them stronger. You know what that, if you're doing math, which I know it's early on a Sunday to do that, but 97% of what you worry about, it's more, nothing more than you punishing your own self with exaggerations and misconceptions. So how many want to go to Minnesota and drive on the ice with me? You know, here's something else. That same study went into detail and it talked about the prolonged damage that fear has on our human bodies and our physiology. Did you know that? That worry kills you? I know it sounds silly, but it does. You know that old saying about worrying makes your hair gray? It actually can. It's really true. It's one of those things that you hear growing up and it does have a detrimental effect on you and your relationships. It actually leads to bodily changes, and the reason is because you are unnecessarily preparing your body for danger. So your body produces these chemicals and hormones that rage through your body, like when I was sitting on the edge of the ice. All of those things going through me actually weren't healthy. Now, if I was in a seriously real dangerous situation, I could have put those things to use. I could have run. I could have fought. You know, the fight or flight response, that would have been a healthy use of those chemicals. But because I wasn't doing anything healthy with them, I was just sitting there, they were actually doing damage to my body. Here's some of the things it says. It says the brain becomes hyper alert. The pupils dilate. The bronchi in your lungs dilate and breathing accelerates. Sound familiar? Your heart and your blood pressure rise. Blood flow and a stream of glucose to the skeletal muscles increase. Organs that are not vital to survival, such as your gastrointestinal system, slow down. Which means you're getting fatter while you're worrying, I'm just saying. Worry is, it's no joke, it's real. For some people, it makes you overeat. Some people, it makes you undereat. I know we're different that way. Chronic stress causes problems. Here's what they say. Those hormones on a constant flow in your body, they literally shrink your brain mass. Studies have shown it lowers your IQ. It makes you prone to heart disease, cancer, premature aging, predicts marital problems, dysfunction, depression, and more likely to develop dementia. So why do we do it? Because we're human. That's what happens. We're afraid. And things that we think might happen, we worry about. And it consumes us, and it takes an ungodly, unrighteous place in our lives. I don't want you to feel guilty about it. I just want us to realize we all struggle with it, and it's something that's real. Not only do we struggle with it, we're going to look at a story in Scripture today where the disciples were in genuine fear. Something that when you look at the situation, we can step back and think they shouldn't have felt that way. But really, it's normal. Let me set the stage for the Scripture we're going to look at. The way that Matthew puts this together, he starts off telling all these things that Jesus had done. Then he tells this story about fear. And what Jesus had done in this one chapter of the book of Matthew is he starts off by healing a man with leprosy. And it's that one in the one story of leprosy where Jesus is walking by and the man says, "You can heal me if you want to." And I love Jesus' response. He goes, "I want to." Boom, you're healed. Another one, the next one is when a Roman officer sends somebody to, or he comes to Jesus and he tells him that his servant is sick and he wants Jesus to heal him. So Jesus gets ready to go with him and the officer says, "You don't need to come because I know how it works. I give orders, people follow them. If you just say the word, he'll be healed." And Jesus steps back and looks around and he says, "I haven't seen this kind of faith in all of Israel. Your daughter's healed." So look carefully what he did. He healed the skin disease. We talked about that last week on another story. Then he heals somebody from a distance. Have you ever noticed that we as human beings, we try to figure everything out. We put formulas to everything. If it happened this way in the past, it's got to happen this way in the future. And that's not wrong. That's a good way to think. But Jesus healed in so many different ways that you would think that people would step back and think, he has no limitations at all. He's healing the skin disease. He's healing from a distance. Look what he does next. He goes to Peter's house, and his mother-in-law is ill. He heals her. And his mother-in-law hops up and feeds them all and serves them. Then he heals a demon-possessed man. And then the Bible clearly says right there, Matthew says, then he healed everybody. The word had spread through town. Hey, this Jesus is healing people left and right. If you got anything, come get in line. And he is literally, it says, healed all the people. Now, not every story does it say he did that, but in this case, he healed everybody in town. How cool would it be to take Jesus right up down here to Center Point and just walk down the halls? When I go to pray for people, I do that often as I'm walking through and I'm going to see somebody and I'll walk into somebody's room that's part of our church and the room's full of people. And it's an atmosphere of joy and healing and health. And I walk by these other rooms and they just look so sad and sorry and I'm so tempted to walk in. I've done that by accident. Let me tell you, that's kind of weird. You walk into a room and it's not the right person. You're like, "Hello, I'm Pastor Dennison in the wrong room." And they look at me and they're like, "Okay." And I'm like, sometimes they say this. They say, "Well, could you pray for me anyway?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm excited to do that. I'm happy to do that." But as I walked down those halls, I'm praying. But imagine if Jesus was doing that and boom, 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 they're just stepping up and walking out. Then this story happens. Jesus got into a boat and started across the lake with his disciples. Suddenly, it's an important word in the story, a fierce storm struck the lake, with waves breaking into the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. He was sleeping in the boat. It's fierce and it's sudden. And the waves are breaking into the boat, but Jesus is asleep. Then the disciples went and woke him shouting, "Lord, save us. We're going to drown." Jesus responded, "Why are you afraid?" That's our question today. Why are you afraid? You have so little faith. Does that hurt your feelings, by the way? Then he got up and rebuked the wind and waves. And suddenly, there was a great calm. Suddenly. The disciples were amazed. "Who is this man?" they asked. They might have said it like this. "Who is this man?" They might have said, "Oh my goodness, who is this guy?" Even the wind and waves obey him. Why would fishermen be afraid of a storm? Have you wondered that before? These guys fished the lake, some of them, for a living. They'd probably grown up on the lake. Now, I don't know about you. Some of you, well, I'm not going to ask that. I know some of you don't know how to swim, so water can be kind of dicey for you. Some of you haven't had a lot of experience on the lake, but these guys did. They knew the water. It couldn't have been the first time they'd seen a storm strike, and it couldn't have been the first time they'd been in a bad situation, but they were legitimately afraid. What that tells me, it was really a bad storm. What it tells me is that comparing to other experiences that they had, that this one was they were scared for their lives. And they couldn't understand why Jesus was asleep right behind them. They would know what a bad storm was. When I was a kid, I've mentioned to you many times, my dad was in the Navy and we lived in the Philippines. And I just want to show you this really quick. Here's a picture of the map of the Philippines. And where it says there, Danilo Atienza Air Base, that used to be called Sangley Point. And when the United States gave that back, they renamed it to that. And then Corregidor Island's right there. So I just kind of want to give you an idea of where we lived. And then this is kind of a close-up of that. You can see how far those away from each other. The air base from Corregidor Island is about, it's about 15 miles or so, maybe 20, because the mouth of the bay is 13 miles across. The entire, from the longest point across the bay, is about 40 miles. You can see there. So it's just a little over. Your line of sight on flat surface is about 12 miles, and the curvature of the earth keeps you from seeing further than that. So from our base, you couldn't see Corregidor. Corregidor is a very important island, especially, you know, in the war with Japan, but then also the Spanish War. It's basically an island full of guns and, you know, huge battlements. So we were headed there I went with my mom on a Girl Scout field trip. So you can imagine, I'm a little dude, I'm 8 or 9 years old, and all these girls are there. That's the first thing I remember, because there wasn't any other boys. So I thought it was cool, at least, that the guys running the boat were men. It's a boy thing. So I remember as we're headed over there, and we were on Corregidor and looking at all the cool things, the clouds started to roll in, and they started to get worse and worse. Now, we lived there for years, so we knew what that meant. Everybody knew what it meant. And I remember even as a kid watching my mom kind of get afraid and worry. And I remember her going up to the guys that captained the ship and say, should we leave early? Because these winds look bad. The storms look like there's a storm coming. And they kept telling her, no, we know this. We got this. We do this all the time. Okay. And it wasn't a huge boat, but it was big enough for about 25 of us. And it had a tower thing on it. It wasn't a small boat, but it was big enough. So I remember then when the wind started to really pick up, and then the guys got scared. And they said, we need to go now. So we all boarded the ship or the boat, and we started going back. Now, we couldn't see. Once we left there, I think I know what those guys were feeling. Because when the waves started to come up, you couldn't see any land anywhere. And I remember standing in the back, and as it started to rock over these big swells, I remember that feeling. You ever been on a boat when it goes up and then it goes down, and you feel like lighter than air? And at first, that was fun. And then the waves started to crash over the edge. And I looked around, and I remember this. You know how you get those little memories, and all you see is a picture? I remember looking up, and from where I was standing, I could see the guy captaining the boat up in the tower. And I remember him looking around, and his eyes were like this. And I remember him saying, get everybody in! And the waves, it was unbelievable. And I remember us holding hands in the bottom of that little boat and my mom leading us all in prayer. And I talked to her about this recently. They thought we were going down. I saw fear that day in adults that I don't remember, think I'd ever seen before. You know, as a kid, you trust the adults, right? They know. When I read this story, I don't think less of those guys. I realize they were worried. And Jesus said to them, why are you afraid? The disciples said to him, don't you see the storm? Don't you see it? First thing I think you need to hear today. The first thing I see you think you need to hear. He sees your storm. But he sees it differently than you do. Now, the disciples saw the storm and they knew what a storm was. Jesus saw the storm, but he saw it in a broader, bigger context, and he knew who he was, and he knew the plan that he had for them, and he knew further and beyond. It's perspective. I could see it like this. Father knows best. There's times where you don't know what's going on, and you feel like it's all reckless and out of control, but there's a God who loves you that knows that's not the case. He knows more than you. He knows beyond what you know. He knows what he's going to do through this experience and how he's going to use it to your benefit. I imagine St. Patrick thought he was in a storm his entire childhood as a slave. But then there's a God who knew that he was going to have him escape and then use that experience for him to be an incredible witness to an entire country. I can't imagine how embarrassed he is of his holiday, considering what it really meant and who he was. And seeing they say he built over 400 churches on that island. One guy. It's unbelievable the effect he had. I want you to hear this for a minute. There's a God who knows. He can bring purpose. He sees the whole picture. He sees the peace on the other side of the storm that you cannot see when you're in the storm. So when Jesus says to them, "Why are you afraid?" He's not insulting their sea craft. He's not insulting the idea that this is a serious storm. It is. He knows it's serious. In fact, I would say it like this. He sees your storm. He knows what's going on. The difference is he knows the end too. And the difference is you can trust him. He knows it. Think about this in perspective again. What had just happened? What had he just done with them? You know how it is with your kids and they do something over and over and you say, "What did I just say?" Right? You've all said that. Jesus could have said, "What did I just do? Didn't you see me heal the man with leprosy? Didn't you see me heal the man from a distance? Didn't you see me cast out the demon and then heal everybody else in town? And Peter, didn't you see me heal your mother-in-law? Do you think I did all that so we would drown here in the sea?" Now, of course, Jesus didn't say all those things. But he could have. He could have said, do you think that I could do all those things and yet not take care of us here? When he said, "Why are you afraid?" It wasn't an insult. It was a reminder. Why are you afraid now, having been through all these other things, like that song we sang today in worship? If he's done these things, won't he do the others? But I also want to be honest about this. It's normal to doubt. And when you're in the sea, it's normal to grip the edge of the boat and say, "I don't know what's going on, and I'm afraid." That's normal. It's normal. It's normal to question God and to say, "Don't you know what's going on?" I want to say that because I feel like there's people going through a storm and you're ready to give up and maybe doubt is growing. And there's a point in your life where you need to stop and say, "Look, I believe in you, but help my unbelief. And I'm struggling right now, and that's okay." Because really, our Christian life is really a walk of faith. And faith doesn't mean that you're blind to reality and blind to problem. What it means is that you hold on to him in the middle of your problems. C.S. Lewis said it this way. He said, "Faith is the art of holding on to things in spite of your changing moods and circumstances." You may forget that you are at every moment totally dependent on God. God allows us to experience low points in life to teach us lessons that we could learn no other way. I know it's cliche, but you would never appreciate the sunshine if there wasn't rain. You would never know what that meant. Blaise Pascal said this: "In faith, there's enough light for those who want to believe and enough shadows to blind those who don't." It's always a struggle. We always go back and forth with faith and wonder what is going on. I think there's something else to this. They forgot who was in the boat. I think when they looked back there, they saw somebody named Jesus who they knew, and they knew what he had done, but they forgot what he was capable of. And they forgot that he had continually said, "I have a mission and I have a job." Just like I prayed over these children who are up here today and their parents. The fact is, every single one of us, before you were born, God had a plan for you. He had a plan for you. That's why I think when somebody chooses to end a baby's life before it's born, it just crushes me, because I think you don't even know what God had intended for that child. God has a plan for every single one. And I think as those disciples were sitting in the boat and they saw Jesus there, they forgot who he was. Of course they knew who he was. They knew his name. They knew all of that. But they forgot in reality who he was. That this was a man on a mission, and his mission wasn't complete and it wasn't destined to end there. He had a mission. It was different than all of that. So when I ask you, why do you worry? I'm not meaning is it an insult. What I mean is you forget that God also has a plan for you. And that while you may be in an ocean right now that seems fierce and scary, and the waves are crashing over and you don't know what to do, you do know somebody who does, and he cares about you and he has a plan. The question is, can you trust him enough? I think what else has happened is, not only were they forgot who was in the boat, but they were working and relying on themselves. There's nothing wrong with that. They were doing the right things. They were doing the right things. They were fighting the wind. They were fighting the waves. They were fishermen. They knew how to deal with the ocean and the water. They knew that. I'm sure they were bailing water out. It reminds me, this is a stupid story, but I'm going to tell you. This friend of mine, we didn't have much money, and we wanted to go fishing, and we were looking at the kelp paddies off the coast of Point Loma, and we saw that there were stairs to go down there. So my friend had this rubber raft. It was a good-sized raft. It wasn't like a kiddie one. It was a real raft. So we inflated that thing and we walked it down there with our poles and everything. We got in the water and we went out and we were fishing in the kelp pads and it was awesome. We caught all these rock bass. What we didn't realize or think about, this is just, I look back and think, God, we're stupid. And we had these fish on a stringer, and then we forgot about the tide coming back in because we saw our stairs disappearing. So we thought, we need to get back over there. So we're headed over there. What we didn't realize is when we're going over the kelp with a raft, you know, we can easily go over kelp. But what happened is all those fish on the stringer got pulled up right next to us, and they had these big spines. Because as we're paddling, we're like, man, the boat's getting awful spongy. Like, and the way they had poked holes in the boat. And as we're getting close, we're like, I don't think we're going to make it. You know, we weren't dressed to swim. We were fishing, and it was stupid. And we made it, but we were wet, and we were dumping water out. And I think about those disciples. They had to be bailing with everything they had. And we didn't take anything to bail with, so we were thinking, what are we going to bail with? Well, our shoes are already wet. Let's bail with those. I mean, it had to be the silliest looking picture. If there were any tourists up there, they probably thought, these guys are absolute morons, and we were. But we did catch fish, and anyway. They were doing the right things. But they weren't going to the right person for the answers. Do you see that? They were trying to fix it themselves, and everything they were doing wasn't working. And then when they finally looked back and they said, Jesus, do you know we're going to drown? So I give them credit, because the truth is, fear is real. And bad things happen all the time. And you try to do what you can do, but in the end, the one who had the answers was in the boat. Bad things do happen all the time. Jesus actually promised that. He said, in this world, you will have trouble. It is a rough place to live, and bad things happen left and right. I think about the Kellys losing this baby, and it just crushes my heart. I'm so sad. Think about my friend as a month ago that he had that stroke and ended up dying. I just heard that my secretary from Minnesota, her husband, big, strong, strapping guy, when we moved there, I had just gotten a leg. I couldn't even unload our truck. This guy single-handedly unloaded the thing. I mean, he's so strong. And then she let us know that he's been diagnosed with ALS and is already in a wheelchair. Bad things happen. Life is not fair. Storms come to each of us. It happens that way. In fact, Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn. Why would he say that? Because that's part of our life on this earth, is mourning. You will never be free of problems till you end up in heaven. The truth is, this life is a constant storm after storm after storm. And the calm water's there, and you head out in your raft to fish, and things happen. But there's someone in the boat who loves you. That the thing is, fear is going to force you to make bad decisions. In the middle of those things, it cripples your personality. And we talked about, I mentioned to you all those bad things physiologically that happen. I mean, it literally can steal time from your life and years and relationships. But they do deserve credit, don't they? They did go to Jesus. I mean, it's when they went to Jesus is the thing I think about. I mean, they were trying so hard on their own, and maybe you're in this place now where you've worked, and you haven't gone to him. And maybe because there's been things that come into your life that have made you doubt, and you've prayed for other things that haven't happened yet, and because of that, you're still trying to do it on your own. The thing is, I want to challenge you to do this, to go to Jesus first. With all of those problems, maybe you're worried about something at school. Maybe it's tests or papers or friends have abandoned you or enemies or frenemies or whatever. Maybe it's something at home. Maybe it's your marriage. Maybe it's your kids. Maybe it's house repairs are looming and your finances aren't adding up. And maybe it's your work and there's a promotion that hasn't happened or a demotion that has happened or your health. Or have you prayed about it? Have you prayed about it? Have you prayed about it? If he can do those other things, can you trust him? Can you trust him? I think you can. Nick, if you would join me up here. There's this passage Paul wrote to the Philippians in chapter 4. It's a church, it was a church in Asia Minor in a city called Philippi. And he says to them, don't worry about anything. You could even substitute fear there. Don't be afraid about anything. Now that's a tall order, right? You may be stepping back and saying, God, that's unrealistic. How could you even say that? Well, here's how. He says, instead, pray about everything. Instead of worry, Pray about everything. To tell God what you need and then thank him for all he's done. Then this is what he says. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. Then he says to do this. Now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable, and then think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Let's just say think, not thank. See that word fix? That's you taking a step and controlling what you think about. I see in this a pattern. I feel like Paul gave us a pattern to follow right here. He says not to worry, and instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need, then thank him for all he's done. Thank him for what he's done, reminding yourself of what he's capable of. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds understanding. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. The peace he gives flies in the face of what we see. Then his peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ. I could summarize it like this. Trust God, then focus on his goodness. I'm going to ask you to shut your eyes for a second, everybody in the room. I don't know what storms you're going through. I know some of your storms, at least what you've told me, but I don't know everything. It's impossible. The fact is, we all have storms. All of us. All of us walk a life that is not perfect all the time. Some of you may be in a storm right now, and you're sitting here and thinking, well, Pastor Dennis, I don't even know this Jesus you're talking about. I'm here at church, and I've been to church, and I know the story, and maybe you heard as I talked about communion and the fact that Jesus paid the price for your sin, and you're sitting there thinking that you don't actually have a relationship with him right now. Well, I want to give you this opportunity. If that is you, and you'd like to start a relationship with Jesus today, that you'd actually like to let him in and let him take care of those things that you've done that were wrong, and apply that forgiveness, that sacrifice to your sin, if that's you today, if you'd raise your hand, we would just pray with you for a minute. Anybody like that you would want to pray that Jesus would take away those sins? Anybody at all, just raise your hand really quick and we'll pray with you. All right, let's do this. For the rest of us, I'm just wondering, and just quick, I'm not asking for a lot of detail. I'm just wondering, with your eyes closed and heads bowed, anybody here going through a storm? You feel like the waves are coming over the boat? Would you raise your hand for a second? See those hands? Appreciate the honesty. I know it's tough. Well, here's what I'd like to do very quickly. If those of you who are prepared to help pray with people, if you would come forward very quick, and if you would all stand with me. If you would like somebody to stand in prayer with you for that storm, whatever it is, would you just come out right now and let one of us pray with you? It's our privilege to do that, to stand together. Sometimes it helps to just be next to somebody and say, yes, I'm going through a storm. You don't even have to give the details if you don't care to. That's up to you. But if you want to, you can. And then as you share that and they pray for you, just believing that God would intervene and take care of that storm. Let's just take a moment and pray. If you'd like some prayer, just come on up.